Aloha, Tiki Files. Thank you for joining me for episode 13 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. My guest this week is Russell Feedy, the big kuna behind Lalo Bar in Houston. Lalo's recently started a rum club called the Lalo Land Lovers Rum Club, and we thought now would be a great time to chat about it. I really enjoyed this episode because not only do we talk about the rum club and the inspiration behind it, but we also get into the build-out and process of getting Lalo up and running 4 years ago. It was a great conversation recorded in Lalo, and I really hope you enjoy it. If you'd like to learn more about the Lalo Land Lovers Rum Club and their events, join their Facebook group. The link will be in the show notes. And if you'd like to keep up with the comings and goings of the podcast, you can join the Marooned Facebook group or follow me on Instagram at @DavidFantomatic. Those links will be in the show notes as well. As always, if you've enjoyed this episode or episodes in the past, I hope you'll consider leaving me a review in Apple Podcasts. Reviews and shares really help the podcast reach new audiences. There's no drink for this episode, so take this time to pour yourself a glass of your favorite rum and reacquaint yourself with it, or get to know something new. Once you've done that, all you'll have left to do is sit back, relax, and enjoy. Episode 13 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki Podcast. So what's up, man?
Not much, you know. Living the dream is as they say.
You just, y'all recovered yet from the anniversary party?
You know, I don't feel it. I don't feel like I have. I've been like kind of working straight through, you know. I have a hard time sitting down. I have to stay busy.
Yeah.
And so like even on Monday, which is my only day off, like I just work, you know.
And there's only been, what, 3 or 4 Mondays since then? It doesn't.
Yeah,
it seems like forever ago, though.
Well, I guess it was the first weekend of March, and this is the last weekend, so. Yeah, it does. It does seem like forever ago. Weeks ago.
But that was a blast.
Cool.
And you guys, you said you sold out of your mugs quicker than you did last year.
Yeah, and we had twice as many.
That's awesome.
Yeah, last year, I think it took us all day. I even think we had a few of the brown ones left after. But this time we sold in an hour.
That's crazy. Gone.
Yeah. So I guess next year I got to get 3 times as many, you know? But I guess it adds to the, I don't want to say the value, the mystique of the mug if there's only like 150 of them.
Exactly. You know? Well, and then you know that they're going to sell out super quick too.
Yeah, which is good. I don't want to sit on.
Exactly.
You know.
You don't want to over-order.
Yeah.
Sitting on an additional 200 for the next year.
Yeah. I live in a sea of boxes at home anyway already. So I don't need more boxes. No.
Speaking of which, how's your build coming along? Any progress?
No, not really. I have a name.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the cargo hold.
All right.
Yeah.
I dig it.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to. I'm going to build some kind of like rum crates and get some barrels and stuff and put it in there and make it look kind of like a, you know, cargo hold of a ship or whatever. But I stripped everything down, but I haven't really started anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought some thatch from Brian Martin that he said he had, and it just sits in the middle of the room. I have a shelf in the garage I call the shelf of unfinished projects. And so now I have a big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Hopefully soon. I got to find the time.
Yeah. Of course. And running your own business, I'm sure there's never enough of that.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Or energy, really.
Yeah. That too. I mean, you're here prepping always, I'm sure.
Yeah. And man, I love tiki, you know, but I don't want a tiki at home. A lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I got to stop doing it. You know, so, and then, like I said, I don't want to half-ass it either. So I want it to be really cool. I don't want to just put stuff on the walls, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes me a long time to let things, you know, happen.
Yeah. Oh. Well, how was the build out for this? I don't know that we ever talked about that.
Oh my gosh. It was insane. Me and Elizabeth did like just about everything in here. We hired a guy that was he was a restaurant builder. He worked for his brother or something, and he was starting his own company. Or, I don't really remember the details, really. But he just did kind of like the basic bones, like the plumbing, the electrical. You know, he got us through that, and then me and Elizabeth did all the decor, lighting, everything. It was going to cost something ridiculous to get the tile removed in here, and through typical build-out fashion, you know, it took us four times as long as it should have. So every month that we paid rent, it was like, okay, that was, you know, whatever X amount of money out of the budget.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, man, we can't do the ceiling like we wanted. Oh, man, now we can't do this. And it was like a constant, like, trying to figure out something cheaper as time went by, you know, the getting permits and contractors. It takes a long time. So we did a lot of it, like, we did the floor, we did all the tile, scraped them up Thanksgiving Day. We did all the glue Christmas Day, and then we sealed it New Year's Day. It was like, we had those holidays, yeah. You know, it was like, those I'm not going to waste the time,
yeah.
You know?
Well, and then, like you said, I mean, every month that you're paying rent, that's less that you're able to do to the bar,
because yeah.
That's just money that you're burning to,
yeah.
That you're not making back because it's not open yet.
Right. And it was less and less that we could spend on, you know, the important stuff like booze.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a real, real budget crunch and resourcefulness, you know, that, I don't know. We just kind of did it. You know, what could you do? We did this wall. This is wallpaper. And it's like 10 sheets that are like little squares or whatever, or rectangles.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth did it. Neither of us had ever wallpapered anything before. I mean, I don't know how to wallpaper. And she couldn't get out of bed the next day. And I had to take her to the chiropractor and like get her all cracked up. Because she was like...
Yeah.
I mean, it was like... And so the sheets are like... 5 feet by like 3 feet or whatever, so they're not small, you know, and like you have to soak them in water first and like put the plaster up, and so you're like on a ladder trying to line these cracks up so that, I mean, you could tell some of them are perfect, but I mean, it was insane. I mean, everything in here was just like, we'd never done anything like that before. I mean, I know how to use a saw, but that was about it, you know.
So you weren't a general contractor before?
No, but I feel like I could be
at this, you know, point. Start doing bar, yeah, build outs.
Right. I've thought about that. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like my real skill set is somewhere else, you know. But yeah, it was fun. Everything got shipped to our house and sat in the living room for like 6 months. So we had rolls of thatch and rolls of bamboo and stuff that was just in the living room. At one point, like, to get from the living room to the kitchen, there was like a 2-foot path, like a foot path, because there was like glasses and boxes and like the wells and like everything was in our house, you know, and like my garage was full of stuff, and I mean, it was just like all inside. And so we were running out of time, or, you know, like I said, the contractors, you have to wait for the contractor, and then you have to wait for the city of Houston to come out and okay it. So we're like, we got all this stuff, what are we going to do? So we would build I built the bar in pieces, mm-hmm, at my house, and then we brought it up here and reassembled it. And so we had like a little mini bar in the garage that we were like assembling, you know, and like, it was just crazy. We bought the booths in Dallas on Craigslist. We drove up there, and they were out of like a little Mexican restaurant on the north side, and they smelled like tortilla chips and were covered in, it was across the street from like an elementary school or something, and so I guess kids hung out there a lot.
Oh, okay.
So they were like covered in like paint and gum, and it was crazy. But I gained a lot of experience, like you're saying.
Yeah. Well, and it looks awesome.
Cool. You know, I feel like a tiki bar should be that way. I don't feel like you should, you know, it should be built by somebody, you know, mm-hmm. and not like a contractor.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, you know, we're talking about Bamboo Ben builds it. Well, that's one thing, you
or
know.
Tiki
but,
Diablo. Or,
right,
yeah.
right. That's one thing. Like, those guys are really building, you know, that's your Beachcomber or whatever. But, you know, Don the Beachcomber built it with this, you know, with the stuff he collected. So mm-hmm. I feel like a tiki bar should be like that. It should be like a, you know, stuff you collected and stuff you did and the stuff you, you know, it's part of it.
Yeah.
Tongan warrior, you know, does his own carvings, you know, so.
Well, yeah, like I said, I don't know that we had ever talked about it, but I love it. I mean.
Cool.
You did good work.
Cool.
The booths are super cool. Would have never known they came from a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah. In Dallas. Drove up there one day. I made the guy promise me he wouldn't sell them to anybody else because the price was just insane. It was like $400 for 15 booths or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, oh yeah. And they're $400 a piece new, you know, for cheap ones.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I'm in Houston. I got to work all week. I can't go there. I made him over the phone, like, promise you're not going to sell this to anybody else, you know? And he's like, okay. And so we drove up there one Sunday and put them all in the back of my dad's truck, rented a U-Haul and brought them all home. And then Elizabeth cleaned them by hand and like scraped everything off with razor blades. I mean, like I said, we did everything.
I thought you were going to say they were refinished.
Well, no. We didn't get them refinished until like 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got the seats redone.
Okay.
But no, they cleaned up nice.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really heavy duty vinyl.
Comfortable.
Yeah, and they cleaned up real nice. They were pretty expensive when they were new, you know. They were just old. So I still have, like I said, I have 14 of them. There's only like, you know, six here.
Just waiting for the vape shop next door to close down.
That's right. Or, you know, the second installment, wherever that's going to be.
Yeah.
You know.
And who did the carving on the ends of the booths?
I got those. Those are from the Philippines. Yeah, it was just like Tiki Master or something like that, some generic Tiki website. You know, we mounted them and put the bamboo like that. But, you know, like I said, it was kind of a budget on a budget. You know, and those were, when we first started, those were the only Tikis we had. You know, we didn't have, like, and Tiki Master, the website, has a lot of stuff that's like, they have some big ones too. They have like 8 foot. They even have like some 10 foot. But you know, they're like $10,000 or something.
Oh, and then to ship it.
Right. And so we didn't have a ton of tikis. And then this guy named Alan contacted us on Facebook. He was like, "Hey, I heard you guys are opening a tiki bar. I carve tikis. And I have a bunch of tikis that, you know, are too big for me to keep at home. I'd like to get rid of them." And we're thinking, okay, sounds good. You know, somebody wants to sell us some tikis. And then they showed up. And, I mean, they were, like, museum quality, mm-hmm. you know. And then I looked at his stuff. He's like, "Oh, I'm on Tiki Central." And I looked on his stuff on Tiki Central. And, I mean, it was just amazing, the stuff that he carved, you know. And, he was real generous. He was like, "I'll sell all of them for, you know, a really good price to you. If you just, I just want them to be at a really nice home."
Yeah. Or to be in a tiki bar.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the way tiki should happen, we met Roy. You know, Roy, mm-hmm. Big T.
Yeah.
This is a tree in his yard. Maurice was. So we call him Stoner Steve, the guy with the red eyes in the front.
Okay.
But Maurice and Stoner Steve were trees in Roy's yard, you know, and now Roy's one of our, you know, best customers.
Yeah.
Comes all the time, and I've met other people through Roy, and it just kind of, you know, they're almost like our connection to, like, the real Texas tiki scene.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And having Jason do your artwork
for
your menus.
Yeah.
That's just bringing one more thing in. And that's why I love the Texas Tiki community, because it is just people who want to do the same thing.
Right.
Who want to promote Tiki.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely our core audience. Mm-hmm. You know, we get a lot of people through the door, but it's, you know, it's those people that come in Aloha shirts that understand, you know, what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
You know, the vibe we're trying to put forth. So, yeah, it just kind of, and you know, and then I met Jay, which I kind of knew Jay before. Like, I know Clouseau, and, you know, Jay was in, I think he was in a ska band. I think he was in The Suspects, maybe. Well, he was in some ska band. I can't remember. Yeah. Sorry, Jay. But, and so I got introduced to him, and he told me he was a carver, you know, and then we started buying carvings from him. And so he made these tables, which I made the table, but he made the carving.
Yeah.
I just attached the hardware to it, you know, and leveled it. So yeah, this really is like a Texas Tiki, you know, kind of team effort.
Absolutely.
If you will, you know? And then y'all, you know, you guys provide the sounds.
Yeah, we try to anyway. We try not to run too many people off.
I really like y'all's sound.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I didn't, what's your bass player's name?
Gareth.
I didn't realize how talented he was until the last time y'all played here. That guy's, like, insane.
Yeah, he wasn't a bass player until, I mean, he played guitar.
You could tell that. Yeah. He definitely looks like a guitar player. But.
And I think that's part of why what he does on bass is a little different. It's not strictly root notes, because he comes at it like a guitar player.
Right.
So.
Well, it just adds such a dynamic to surf music that isn't there in a lot of surf music, you know?
Yeah.
That real heavy. A lot of surf music, it's kind of just a, you know, ambient bass kind of plucking along.
Yeah, and it's just strictly the rhythm section.
Right,
whereas
where he's, you know.
Yeah,
he's got really some parts where he's adding to it.
Yeah, thanks.
Adding to that deepness that y'all have, you know, that warmth.
Thanks, yeah. He'll be stoked to hear that.
Cool.
But yeah, but the reason we're here to talk about the Land Lovers Rum Club.
All right, cool. Yeah, so, you know, Rum Club is kind of a common thing amongst tiki bars. As we were talking about earlier, tiki bar is kind of like someone's collection of stuff. Well, we collected some rum. I love rum. It's kind of been, you know, as bartenders, we all have styles, right? And my style, obviously, is tiki. And so rum's always been kind of an important part of that. You know, even when I wasn't working in tiki bars, which this is my first tiki bar I've ever worked in. But before we opened this place, you know, if you came to a bar I was working at and you were like dealer's choice, I'd make you a Mai Tai, you know, or planter's punch or something like that. So it's just kind of like professionally, it's something I'm really interested in. And then all the things that I like are part of rum. You know, I really like, I love reggae is my music of choice. I really love the Caribbean culture and tiki culture and all that, you know. So rum's always just kind of been a thing for me. And that's why we kind of wanted to open a tiki bar. So the Rum Club is for people that, you know, are interested in learning a little bit more. It's something fun. We're going to add to it as we go. We'll probably do some sort of map or passport idea eventually to where you can, like, work your way through our list. But I've always wanted to kind of share a lot of the stuff I've learned with customers. Rum's probably the most confusing.
Absolutely.
At the same time. You know, it comes from so many different places. There's so many different regulations. Mm-hmm. So many different styles that, you know. And I think it's something that the young drinker starts with, right? You know, you go to, let's say, a college party. I was going to say high school party. Let's say you go to a college party, right? And, you know, there's like a Bacardi trash can punch, or, you know, somebody's drinking like Captain Morgan and Dr. Pepper. You know, it's like fun early stuff, right? And there's all this marketing with pirates and
screwdrivers,
you know,
with Sailor Jerry.
Yeah, there you go. And so I think you, like, start with rum. And then you drink too much of it, or you you drink 151, which you probably shouldn't do at that age. You know, and then you're like, I don't want to do this. And you kind of graduate, you know, upwards or, you know, a lot of people stop drinking liquor. Anyway, so rum, like I said, it's very confusing. And it has kind of this, a lot of people have pre-ideas and experiences with it. So, you know, as a bar professional, it's kind of my job to help people with it. And so that's kind of where the Rum Club comes in. We want to kind of help our customers, you know, understand what we're doing. You know, it's just a way to give back to them. It's a way to help them kind of heighten their drinking experience, you know.
Well, and an educated drinker, I think, has a better experience at a bar. Next time they come in, they know more about what's going into their drinks. Right. They can pay more attention. And yeah,
there are so many reasons to drink quality stuff. You know, health reasons, the way you feel the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what, like with rum, you drink some of the big brands, you know, and you're not really providing to the economies of the world, right? You're just putting money
into a conglomerate.
Yeah, into these big corporations. And when you start really getting down to the smaller distilleries and stuff, you know, you're really giving back to these islands that have been through a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's all kinds of reasons to drink quality stuff, you know, and I hope that we can help people, you know, get there, you know, and understand it a little bit more. You know, I really appreciate it. You know, there's so much to appreciate with spirits, you know. That's one of the reasons that, you know, I graduated from wine. Wine was always kind of like the thing you did when you were in the bar industry or in the restaurant industry. I was a waiter. So you learned about wine because wine was what we sold to people.
Yeah, you know, what you serve with dinner.
Right. And so when I got off, I'd go drink rum somewhere. You know, I didn't drink wine. And so, you know, I learned to appreciate the finer stuff, you know, being exposed to wine. And then you start getting into spirits and it's kind of a different animal, you know. There's a lot of money in spirits. There's a lot of big corporations in spirits, you know, which there is in wine as well. But there are a lot of really small things in spirits, you know, that you discover that are like been around for, you know, distilleries have been around for 300 years.
Yeah.
You know, Mount Gay, which is owned by a big company, it's one of the smallest distilleries, you know, in the Caribbean. It's really not a big place. They've been using the same water for 350 years, you know, same source. You know, it used to have a windmill that pumped it out of the ground. Like you learn that kind of stuff, and it's like, man, this is really gives you stuff to appreciate. You
know? There's a history to it.
Yeah, for sure. So we hope we can, you know, obviously I have a passion for it, so I hope I can help other people kind of find their passion, you know, in rum.
Yeah, and what I think is super cool is you're doing two different groups, right? You're doing the beginner and then the more experienced.
Yeah, I hate putting labels on things, but you know, the beginner group, which we are calling how to read a rum label. I think, like we were saying, when you first start drinking rum and you're in, you know, your favorite liquor store or whatever, you're on that aisle and you see all the colors and the cool pictures and the octopus and the pirates over here and
or the
stingrays.
One that's shaped like a jack-o'-lantern or
Even just
bottles
totally.
That are attractive.
You know, you see all the stuff and you're like, wow, I don't know what to pick, you know. I want to pick, like you're saying, the jack-o'-lantern one, you know.
May not be the best, but it looks cool, and it's
right,
going to look
right.
cool at
and
the
that's
bar.
Fine. That's fine. You know, I have a philosophy you should drink everything, you know, and you should find out, you know, what everything tastes like. If you can't say stuff is the best if you don't know what the worst is, you know?
Exactly.
But, so I want to help kind of that beginning consumer that's just, you know, they came here, they liked it, they felt like this could be a cool place for them to hang out, and they want to learn a little bit more, you know? And so we're going to kind of go over the language on rum. We're going to look at, like, the first class, which is I've been working on. We're actually going to look at what the TTL, which is the federal people that approve labels in, I think I said the right, TTL, that approve labels here in the United States. We're going to look at their criteria, you know, and, like, this has to be on there. This has to be on there. This is on there, you know, and, like, that's your core information that you should always start with. The product of Barbados. Alcohol content, you know, and then we're going to talk about, you know, what language is it in? Is it in English? Is it in Spanish? Is it in French? You know, and just kind of build a basic kind of knowledge, and then introduce them to kind of more advanced regional styles that they wouldn't be exposed to. Break away from that white rum.
Yeah.
Break away from the gold rum. But without getting too, like, you know, into it to where it's confusing.
Without getting overwhelming.
Yeah. And then the most important thing, I think, Lisa, I thought it was a good idea. If they're a beginning drinker and they're not really hip into spirits yet, they probably don't want to sit around and drink like 3 or 4 straight up, you know, flights of rum. So we're going to do kind of a, based on, as we're examining the rum labels, we're going to talk about classic rum cocktails and where they come from. And so you could see, like, for instance, a Carta Blanca style, which comes from Cuba. Of course, we're going to make some daiquiris and kind of show them how to make a classic daiquiri at home. And so if, you know, you're at the store and you see a 3-year-old Carta Blanca style rum, like from El Dorado or something, you'd be like, okay, I like this. I want to make a daiquiri with this, you know? And so, you know, just build kind of on that base. And then the advanced class is for, I guess, lack of a better word, for geeks. I'm obviously a spirits geek. There's lots of history. And something that I have, that I've kind of been working on just with this place and working on business plans and working on, you know, introductions to my rum list and stuff like that. I've developed this kind of theory that I think is important to Tiki. One of the things that people always say when Don the Beachcomber, who, you know, invented mm-hmm. Tiki, when he first started, they're like, why did he use rum? He put together this kind of like Polynesian faux place. Well, why did he use rum? And they always say, oh, because it was cheap. Well, if you know anything about Don the Beachcomber, Don the Beachcomber grew up on a sugar plantation. He traveled to the Caribbean. He traveled to Polynesia. He had experience with rum. You know, the story is that he bootlegged rum into Louisiana and California during Prohibition. So, I mean, he was exposed to it. My experience is at distilleries is they want to tell you their story. And so even if he's just showing up and picking up a case of rum to smuggle back to America, they're going to tell him something.
Yeah.
You know, these people have been making rum for 200 years. They're going to teach him something.
They're proud of their product.
Right. You know, and obviously he was a man of details, so he probably wanted to know some of these things. So I think, and there's my theory, that Tiki is the story of rum. If you think about where sugarcane comes from, sugarcane is from Papua New Guinea. Polynesian warriors carried it around with them and planted it all over Southeast Asia. That, you know, went from China, it went through India, it went through the Middle East, into Africa, into Europe, and exposed Europe to sugar, and along with that, distilling. And so, you know, for instance, one of the craziest places, and I like the history, the Aku Aku in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Don the Beachcomber was a consultant. It was after he lost his liquor licenses to his wife, or she sued him for the company or whatever. And so he was a consultant, and they built the Aku Aku. Well, the Aku Aku was an Indian restaurant. They served Indian food. The guys wore like fezes and saris, mm-hmm. you know, but it still was a tiki bar and had elements of all that. Well, India is an important part of the Caribbean. Almost everything in the Caribbean is Indian. You know, it's not a coincidence that this place was an Indian restaurant, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think if we talked to Don the Beachcomber, he would tell us, like, no, y'all got it all wrong. I'm trying to tell the story of rum, you know? And so the advanced class is called Spirit of Tiki. And so the first class is called Spirit of Polynesia, and we're going to explore sugarcane, what sugarcane should taste like. We're going to explore some white rums that are distilled to lower proofs so we can taste some sugarcane in the rums. The second class is called the Spirit of Tradition. It's going to talk about the development of the Caribbean, rum tradition in the military, traditions amongst distillers. The next class is called Spirit of Revolution. It's going to kind of show how revolutions throughout the world help shape the rum industry. And then I can't remember what the fourth class is called. It's called I can't remember, but it's about Don the Beachcomber, the okay. fourth one. It's about how he changed the rum industry, you know, and really brought it to the forefront. And then we're going to explore Cuba and stuff like that. So, well, obviously I have like up to like three classes written, you know, so it should be really good. We're going to taste. The advanced class is going to be strictly spirits. It's all going to be in a flight form. We're going to kind of see different examples and stuff of like I said, the spirit of tradition. We're going to taste Bajan rum, Jamaican rum, Guyana rum. You know, those are the Navy rums, mm-hmm. you know. And so it should be fun. I hope that people really are stimulated by it. You know, like, I feel like the full drinking experience is when you really appreciate the history and everything else, you know. It really makes it special. So I hope that's what people get out of this.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, it sounds like you're very detailed about it. So, I mean, that's super cool.
Yeah.
And I think teaching people about this stuff, like you said, they're going to have a more of an appreciation next time they pick up a bottle. Next time they go to the store to buy a bottle, they're going to have more of an appreciation once they understand what they're looking for. And once they know what to use it or how to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, there's so much to appreciate about rum. I mean, there's, you know, years of Caribbean slavery that you need to recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times of down in the Caribbean when, you know, the French decided they weren't going to use Caribbean sugar anymore. And so the French islands had to figure out what they were going to do. You know, there's so much to it, you know, so much history. You know, the first processing of sugar was in 500 BC. You know, that's how far back it goes, you know. They were making sugarcane distillants around that time, you know, so.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot to learn, for sure.
So you just did the first one a couple weeks ago with Ed Hamilton. How was
that? Yeah, so that was like a sign up kind of thing. It was a good turnout. We had a lot of people show up. Yeah. So we kind of had everybody sign up, and I sent out some welcome emails to the people that signed up, and you know, I got some responses from a lot of people. If you haven't responded yet, do that. So you know, I could see who's really in it, who really wants to put some time in it. Obviously I'm not going to force you to come to every single class, but you know, I'd really like the people to build on the knowledge and not just like come to one class and then skip another one, you know? But it was awesome. Yeah. Ed's pretty awesome. He's everything that you would expect from a rum expert.
Yeah.
You know, he's just got story after story. He could tell you the stuff that, you know, you don't want to know, or, you know, that guy is just a lifetime of knowledge, you know. I mean, he's been to every distillery. It's really awesome talking to him. So I hope a lot of people got to talk to him, you know. I didn't want him to give a presentation. It's, you know, stuffy kind of. Just hang out and talk to folks and tell us your stories, you know. So that was really cool. And then we're going to do another kind of a social meetup event with Don Q on April 12th. You know, that should be cool too. Yeah.
So these meetings that you're having so far, the ones that you have scheduled, those aren't necessarily like the class. That's
no.
Just, okay.
So these are, so I wanted to do, obviously there's a lot of brands that are involved in the spirits industry. You know, and nothing against brands or anything like that, but I kind of wanted to keep the educational classes pure, you know, without, you know, this brand or that brand, you know. And also, like I said, we're going to taste a flight of four different spirits. You know, I mean, there's going to be four different brands that are involved or whatever. You know, it's hard to put the brands and stuff, you know. But the brands have a lot of resources, and they do a lot of fun stuff. So I'm going to do kind of like separate brand tastings and get the distributors involved with extra stuff. So there's going to be sort of like the come and go social aspect. So if you don't want to really be involved with the geeky stuff, you know, you can just come and hang out with cool people that like rum. So that was kind of like Ed Hamilton. And then this next one with Don Q and Nino from Don Q. And then we'll have like the hard sign up classes, which we're starting those in May.
Okay.
You know, and then there'll be other events as well. I eventually, want to do like a flight of the month for club members. Crop Over is in June in Barbados. And so we're going to make June Barbados Rum Month. So we're going to have like a secret flight that if you're a club member, you can come and ask for the flight.
If you flash your Dakota ring.
Yeah, right. Okay. Right. I need to come up with Dakota rings. So there'll be stuff added to it, you know, as we go. That should be fun, you know, and interactive.
And with that, you also produced a rum list as well for the bar.
Yeah. It's a kind of preliminary thing. I don't feel like I'm ever finished with anything. So, you know, I just wanted to put all the rums and I buy so many rums all the time. I want to put all the rums on a sheet so people could look at it. It's in alphabetical order right now, which is not the most useful arrangement for rum. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people that are coming here that are wanting to look at a rum list kind of already know what they like. And so if they can find it on a list real easy, then the bartenders can steer them other directions, you know. Eventually, I'd like to break it down by island and get it to be a little more educational and a little more just fill it with more stuff. But right now, yeah, just a alphabetical list. There's a sheet in there I've been working on that's what to do with them. A lot of rums benefit from mixing in cocktails. So there's a sheet in there, like, you know, we call it Drink Like a Local. So it kind of goes through basic styles and says, hey, if it's a Carta Blanca style, make a daiquiri. If it's a Jamaican dark rum, make a Planter's Punch, you know. And then it talks about, like, Dark and Stormy and coconut water, you know, from the Spanish-speaking islands, you know. And Ting, you know, comes from Jamaica. It's like a grapefruit soda. So all that kind of stuff is listed on there to kind of give you an idea, like, oh, I'm going to pick this rum, you know, which... like Hamilton Pot Still Black. Well, I love that rum, but don't drink it by itself, you know, unless you really want to experience, you know, some serious stuff. You know, you want to drink it in a Planter's Punch. Yeah. So that kind of tells you to do that. You
know? Not for the light of heart. But yeah. That's super cool. And that's a really good idea to put on there. If you like this style, maybe sub it in this drink.
Yeah.
If you're ordering this drink or if you want to experience this rum, but maybe not straight, then swap it for this.
Right.
For this rum.
Right.
So that's a super cool idea.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, we make tiki drinks, number one. I mean, rum is important to us, and we definitely take it serious, but we make tiki drinks, you know, that's what we make. So I want to make sure that people get the tiki experience first.
Yeah.
You know, so that involves us throwing a bunch of juice in the rum, so.
Nothing wrong with that. And you guys just recently posted that you have the most rums of any bar in Texas. How many, do you know how many you have currently?
You know, it's, I don't know why, I count everything. I count my steps, I count everything. And for some reason, I can't count these. The last time that I counted, we were hovering right at 200.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive, you know. A lot of the rums that we have aren't available anymore. We've been really collecting them. You know, and I've been hiding some, which is a bad business decision, but you know, I really want to have like an impressive list, you know. So yeah, we're right at 200, and when I say 200, I'm talking 200 premium rums. You know, that doesn't count like our flavored rums that we make in house and the few flavored rums that we like that we have. There's no like big brand blending rums, you know, none of the kind of one-off kind of big, like I said, big brand rums. Like, we don't have that stuff. We have brands, you know, and rums that come from actual distilleries, you know, that aren't blended somewhere else and slapped with a funny name on it, you know. Like, we're trying to really source, you know, and as much as I can, as much as I can learn, you know, trying to be responsible, sourcing from places that are responsible to the planet, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and then like you said, you have all premium rums, but what I like is that you're actually using those in drinks.
Yeah.
A lot of places, yeah, they have an impressive back bar.
Sure.
But how many of those are in the well, or how many are actually going into the drinks that you're making?
Yeah.
So to see Bella or David grabbing a bottle of Hamilton or getting rum fire, putting those in drinks, I mean,
right,
all the drinks are using quality rums as well.
Right.
Or the coconut rum that you guys make here in-house as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always nice to see that the premium stuff is actually being used.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the drink so good.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and premium rum is, that's the good thing about rum, is premium rum's really not that expensive.
Exactly.
You know, where bourbon and some of those things can be expensive because they come from America, you know, where rum comes from places in the world where, you know, they can make it a little bit cheaper because the cost of everything is cheaper.
Yeah.
You know,
the labor's cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. This is probably a very difficult question to ask you, somebody who's so knowledgeable of rum, but do you have a favorite style, or what is your go-to if you're going to sip something neat?
Man, so that is the hardest question to answer. You're right. If I really had to pick a favorite, I would probably say, I really don't know. I mean, I could say so many. And like I said, you know, like you're saying, rums are so different. You know, I really like rums that come from Panama, from Don Pancho's distillery. I really like Jamaican rum. I mean, Jamaican rum is just so different from everything else. But so if I had to put something on there, it's going to be so different from what I just said. Neeson Special Reserve, I think, would be my, if I was stuck somewhere and I had to only drink one rum the rest of my life, I think that would be it.
It's your desert island rum.
Yeah, right. Agricole rums, you know, are made from sugarcane. And they have such a different flavor, but aged Agricole rums start to mimic rums of all the other islands because of the interaction of wood. And so you get both worlds with that, you know, and Neeson rums are really good. They're really right there. They do a lot of stuff with barrels. It's really small, you know, it's all still handmade. Yeah, probably Neeson Special Reserve if I had to choose. But, I mean, I like it all. I really do. You know, I appreciate them for what they are, every bit of them.
And they're, like you said, they're all so different. I mean, you can't just pick one.
Yeah, but, you know, it's what kind of mood you're in.
Exactly.
You know? I really love, and probably Elizabeth is listening over there. She probably thought I would say St. Lucian rums. And I really love St. Lucian rums, you know. But it's like, you know, there's a time and place for everything. You know, it's what you're looking for, what you're trying to do that. You know, if you want to drink just a glass of rum, you know, you should drink something from Barbados or St. Lucia.
Yeah.
If you want to make a little punch, you know, you should drink some Jamaican rum, you know. Put some lime juice and sugar with it and make a daiquiri. You know, you should drink a Carta Blanca rum. So they all have their time and place, you know. It depends on your mood, you know. But, yeah, like I said, I like it all. It's not really. It's hard for me to pick a favorite. What's your favorite?
Ooh. I like Jamaican rums also. Smith and Cross.
Yeah.
I mean, not neat. I mean, that's
It's
a really potent rum, but I think the flavor that it imparts in just about anything you put it in.
Yeah. It definitely punches through.
Yeah.
It's a good complement to other rums.
Exactly.
It really builds and brings out, you know, flavors of other rums, you know. Same with Rum Fire, which comes from the same distillery. You know, just a little bit of that Rum Fire, half an ounce, added to some other rums, man, it really makes that rum punch, you know, pop through.
Yeah.
You know, and brings out some of the other flavors that you didn't know were there, you know. Rotting fruit flavors.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's, like, I love Smith & Cross on a Mai Tai because it just packs such a punch.
Yeah.
So that's always my go-to. But yeah, I mean, I like so many, So there's so many good plantation rums. Like three-star. Three-star is great in a daiquiri. That's
they make good mixing rums.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Their rums are good in drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a little bit different. You know, they're very unique. You know, they're aged in France, mm-hmm. or at least partly aged in France, you know. They don't deny that they add sugar. They actually barrel-age their sugar. Like, they actually have a program, you know. Like, where some distilleries, they say, deny it, that they add sugar to their rums, you know. They're actually, you know, embracing that, you know, consumers that like sweet rums. It's a great place to start, you know. Sweet rums are pleasant, you know.
Yeah, so. They go down real easy, and like you said, they mix really well.
Yeah, yeah.
All of Ed's stuff is great.
Yeah.
His 86 is super good.
Yeah.
That, of course, is Demerara, so just, they're all different styles are good.
Right.
His St. Lucian's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, if you see it, buy it up, because I don't think there's much more of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then St. Lucian Distillers just got bought by Clamont.
Okay.
And so they're not going to sell any more barrels, and then they're not going to do any more kind of like premium rums other than the ones that they already do as under their labels. So you won't see, you know, any more of that, like Plantation did a St. Lucia. Mm-hmm. You won't see anything like that anymore. So if you see Hamilton St. Lucia's, buy them up, because they're going to disappear.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And then, man, the coolest thing about Ed Hamilton's rums is there's a batch number, and it corresponds with a related barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on his website and enter the batch number into his website, you can see pictures of the barrel that you're drinking, you know? And so, like, that's pretty rad.
Yeah, Ministry
of Rum. You know, you can't say that about anything. You know?
Nobody tracks it like that. Nobody. Right. And then if you go into I can't remember what the distributor's name is, but even the distributor's site, it's got pictures of all the labels. If you click the picture,
Caribbean Spirits.
Yes.
Yeah. That's his actual website.
Okay.
Yeah. So the other one is it's like a forum, if you will.
Yeah.
I think if you will, that's exactly what it's called. It's like the Ministry of Rum forum, which he does talk on, and there's lots of information. It's really important, you know. That's where I've learned a lot is from that forum. But Caribbean Spirits is his importing company.
Okay.
And that's where you can enter the batch number. And then it shows all the Neesons that are available. He imports Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
He imports Duquesne. He imports La Favorite. He imports the best cane syrup into the United States. Like, he's really important to the rum industry. But,
guy.
those websites are really thorough. Whoever's doing his websites are really doing a good job.
Well, and that's why I say, so if you go onto the Caribbean Spirit website, you can click a picture of the label. It's got videos of him talking about the rum, mm-hmm. how he put everything together, how he came across that flavor, that blend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that guy's, like you said, he's really important to rum, and I'm sure he's an insanely busy guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. He definitely does a lot of travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know you got a lot to do. Got to open a bar at some point today. So thank you for taking the time to talk about the Rum Club. That's
Of course.
If there's a Facebook group that people can join.
Yeah, so it's Lay Low Land Lovers Rum Club. And it is lovers, so like LOVERS. And one person did call me out and was like, isn't it supposed to be lubber? Which is old English slang for like a clumsy person, right? And well, no, it's lovers, because rum is directly connected to agriculture. So we're lovers of the land, right?
Yep.
And so Lay Low Land Lovers Rum Club is the Facebook group. And you can catch events on there, you know, what we're going to do next. And if you're not on Facebook, which, you know, all the recent Facebook
Facebook recently,
that has happened, you know, I don't blame you. If you're not on Facebook, you can send me an email. It's laylohtx@gmail.com and say you're interested. Or you could come here to the bar and you could say you're interested, and then I'll get in contact with you.
Cool. And then you guys got a new menu coming out soon?
April. We're hoping to have a new menu. Jason did the artwork again.
Sick.
It's real kind of classic looking artwork. It's really good.
Awesome.
Should be fun.
So next time you guys are in Houston, make sure to stop by Lay Low. if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure that's already on your list of things to do when you're in Houston, is to come to Lalo, because I talk about it all the time. So yeah, if you guys want to find out more about the podcast, you can also join the Marooned Facebook group. I'll post all the links to the Lalo Facebook group. I'll put the email in the show notes for the episode. And if you guys want to follow, Lalo's also on Instagram as well.
Yes, we are on Instagram, Facebook. We don't really do anything with Twitter. I guess the some of the Instagrams go to Twitter. But yeah, Instagram, our Instagram site's really good. We all do it. And so if you like pretty pictures, we try to do as pretty pictures as we can. Yeah, and then there's information and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So keep up with Lalo on Instagram, Facebook, the Lalo Let Rum. The Landlovers Club, yeah.
Landlovers Rum Club, yeah. Yeah, Lalo Landlovers Rum Club.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks again for hanging out, and until next time, Apole Maluna, y'all.